just days after Honduran President Manuel Zelaya, overthrown in a June 28th coup d'etat, clandestinely returned to his nation and took refuge in the Brazilian embassy on September 21st. The coup government's president, Roberto Micheletti, suspended constitutional rights and the freedom of assembly. Micheletti also forcibly closed down media outlets viewed as supportive of Zelaya. But after leaders of the Honduran Congress objected to the decree, Micheletti announced that he would soon ask the Supreme Court to rescind his suspension of civil liberties. President Zelaya, holed up with dozens of supporters in the Brazilian embassy, claimed that the Honduran military, which has surrounded the building, were subjecting people inside to a neurotoxic gas that caused many of them to become ill. The coup government had given Brazil an ultimatum of 10 days to either grant Mr. Zelaya asylum or hand him over for arrest. Zelaya's surprise return to Honduras threw the coup government into apparent disarray. Micheletti had invited officials of the Organization of American States to come to Honduras to prepare for talks, but then blocked four members of the group from entering the country. He later issued a new invitation for an OAS delegation to return. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with New York University professor of history Greg Grandin, who discusses the latest developments in Honduras, the role of social movements, and mixed signals sent by the Obama administration on restoring democratic rule to the Central American nation.
Manuel Zelaya remains in the Brazilian embassy, subject to steady harassment. There's been reports that there's been audio harassment, loud, high-pitched noise meant to create all sorts of disturbances and difficulties with the people inside the embassy. There's been reports of tear gas and other chemicals being sent into the embassy. And I think this coup may be on its, maybe it's a little bit too optimistic, but it may be on its last legs, or it's certainly isolating itself in the international community. You have to remember that the strategy of the people who carried out the coup was to present to the world the argument that this was a constitutional change of government, that this wasn't a coup, that it was a lawful and legal transition from one president to another, a president who supposedly violated the Constitution. And with every action that the coup government takes, I think that argument is revealed to be what it is, a lie.
Now, the de facto government has given Brazil a 10-day ultimatum to deliver Zelaya to them. What's your take on the threats coming out of the de facto government towards the Brazilian government?
I don't believe there's any way that the Honduran government could enforce that ultimatum. If it did, I think it would be even more isolated. Again, remember that its only chance is to get the rest of the world to agree to acknowledge the outcome of these elections scheduled on November 29th. And I think images of the Honduran military storming the Brazilian embassy would be pretty damning.
The United States recently condemned Manuel Zelaya's return to Honduras, where he's holed up in the Brazilian embassy, labeling him as irresponsible and, you know, possibly fomenting violence in the streets through his call to his supporters to rise up and protest and bring down this illegitimate government as he sees it. What do you make of this criticism from the United States government, the Obama administration here?
Well, since the beginning of the coup, since June 28th, now coming on 3 months, the U.S. has sent mixed signals. Barack Obama himself has at times sent very strong message to Honduras that he thought that this was a coup. He called it such, and he at different points demanded the restitution of Zelaya. In many ways, Obama was responding to pressure from other Latin American countries, the Organization of American States and Brazil. On the other hand, there were been elements within the State Department, within maybe you could think of it as the Hillary Clinton wing of the Democratic Party, that has been more circumspect in its condemnation of the coup and the people who carried out the coup. They've been forced little by little to ratchet up the pressure, suspending visas and eventually coming out with a statement saying that it wouldn't recognize the as of now, the November 29th elections. But these kind of comments and trying from different spokesmen within the State Department, within the government, have been a constant since the coup, another indication of the mixed messages that the Obama administration is sending.
Now, what is the power of the grassroots organizations that have taken to the streets at their own peril, arrest and some killing of these protesters at the hands of the police and the military. What power do they have to restore Zelaya to power at this point?
Well, I would say that around June 28th, Zelaya had the support of the organized sector of the population, unionists, peasant organizations, members of the gay and lesbian and feminist community, environmentalists, but pretty much the people who were consciously political, understood themselves as members of the left. I think over the, what's happened over the last 2.5 months is that that base has grown as the economy has suffered as a result of the coup, as these successive curfews, all, you know, 24-hour curfews, indefinite curfews at times, alienate people. They don't have access to food. They don't have access to markets. Small businesses are shuttered. I think the opposition and the discontent is growing well beyond that organized base of the population. Now, at the same time, I think that organized base of the population has gotten the strongest sense of itself. It's been actually very strategic. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that everything that the coup plotters feared Zelaya would do, and probably the reason why they overthrew him, because they were afraid of his alliance and cultivation of the popular movement, they've actually brought into being as a result of the coup. They've polarized the country. They've created a sense of massive delegitimation of state institutions, and they've basically strengthened the popular movement as a result of that coup. So there's a kind of ironic kind of summoning into being what they hope to prevent.
Well, do these groups have any hope of influencing the outcome of a November 29th election or whatever election comes in the coming days?
Well, I don't think so. I think that Honduras has been basically ruled by either a candidate of the Liberal Party or the National Party since the 1860s, except for periods of military rule. It's really a two-party system. When I say two-party system, it's even more restricted than the two-party system in the United States. It's really, the leaders of these parties really come out of a small economic clique, and they pretty much control the electoral machinery. Prior to the coup, it was clear that either a Liberal Party candidate or the National Party candidate was going to win. Since the coup, the National Party candidate had the advantage because the Liberal Party split. But again, it was one or the other. I think the influence of these social movements isn't going to be in the electoral realm. I think it's going to be through the creation of a grassroots movement.
That was Greg Grandin, professor of history at New York University and author of Fordlandia, The Rise and Fall of Henry Ford's Forgotten Jungle City. He serves on the editorial committee of the North American Congress on Latin America. For up-to-date regional reports on the situation in Honduras, visit the website HondurasCoup2009.blogspot.com.